Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Today, we hear stories from Pete Musto and me. We will close the show with an American story. But first, this report from Susan Shand.
The Roman Catholic Church does not allow women to become priests. With the latest sex abuse crisis, some believe it is time for a change. But, they admit, it is unlikely the church will change anytime soon. Pope Francis and the male priests at the Vatican have said repeatedly that the teaching against female priests comes from God and cannot be changed. I don't see any movement to ordain women, said Margaret McGinnis, a religion professor at La Salle University in Philadelphia. The people in power aren't going to look at this as a solution, she added. In the United States, an organized campaign asking for female priests dates back to the 1970s. Its leaders have used the new sex abuse cases, in which the accused are all priests, to help their argument. In one case, former Cardinal Theodore McCarrick is accused of abusing at least two children as well as adult men studying to be priests. In another, a grand jury report from the state of Pennsylvania says that about 300 priests sexually abused about 1,000 children in six dioceses since the 1940s. Bridget Mary Meehan has led a movement calling for female priests that challenges the church's teachings. She said, if we had women as equals and partners, women ordained in the Catholic Church, the church would not be in this mess because we would have parents who would minister and who would make sure children are protected. Church teaching says anyone who tries to ordain a woman will be expelled from the church. The Vatican considers such an act as bad as the sexual abuse of children. Kate McKelvey, head of the Women's Ordination Conference, said church leaders have worked hard over many years to protect abusive priests and ignored the victims. Pope Francis, she noted, has called on all Catholics to help create a new culture in the church to stop the sexual abuse of children. McKelvey said this would require everyone at the table and the end of the old male-only leadership. Under Catholic rules, the priesthood is only for men because Christ chose only men as his 12 apostles. It is considered an unbreakable rule from God. Pope Francis has repeatedly said women cannot become priests, but he has called for a greater role for women in the decision-making areas of the church. In 2016, he created a commission to study the role of female deacons in the early years of the Catholic Church. The work of that commission was never released to the public, but some believe it may someday allow women to become deacons. Deacons can perform many priests' duties, except they are not permitted to celebrate Mass. Kate McKelvey said her organization would welcome a decision to let women be deacons because this might lead to the ordination of women as priests. The Women's Ordination Conference and its allies also believe women priests could help the church with its biggest problem, the shortage of priests in many parts of the world. One of the worst shortages is in the Amazon area of South America. An early report for the Vatican's 2019 meeting on the Amazon called for church leaders to find new official ministries for women to serve there. Michael Higgins teaches at Sacred Heart University in the U.S. He does not think women will be ordained as priests in the near future. But he said that a culture of male power doesn't work anymore. Margaret McGinnis, the LaSalle professor, said church leaders would have to make important changes to stop Catholics from leaving. She added, if they don't do something, people are just going to walk away. I'm Susan Shand.
Egyptian actor Hala Shiha left the film industry 10 years ago for a more religious life. She began to wear the traditional Muslim head cover, or hijab, along with loose clothes that covered most of her skin. Later, the movie star was seen wearing the even more conservative face cover, or niqab. Islamists praised the changes, just as they have when other stars took similar action. But then she had decided she would return to acting and no longer wear the hijab. The religious leaders are no longer celebrating. Talk about the actor's decision immediately flooded social media, newspapers, magazines, and television talk shows. Liberal thinkers praised the 39-year-old for exercising personal freedom. Conservative thinkers expressed opposition. Shiha's case, in many ways, represents a larger conflict in Egypt. A popular rebellion in 2011 that ousted then-President Hosni Mubarak left the country sharply divided. The Muslim Brotherhood Party took control of Egypt after a number of election wins. Its candidate, Mohamed Morsi, became president. Then, in 2013, the Egyptian army ousted Morsi after huge protests of his rule. The new military government, led by President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, declared the Muslim Brotherhood a terrorist group and banned it. Today, the position of women is among the most hotly debated issues of Islam in the country. Shiha has sought to avoid the argument over her decision. I never meant to insult or offend anyone, she told the Associated Press. Just because I took off my hijab doesn't mean I am against it, not at all. She said the decision was a personal choice and that she did not want to be part of any political conflicts. Shiha's family members said she recently opened an Instagram account and has about 150,000 followers. She is without a hijab in all the posted images. A recent video published on Instagram has likely upset Islamic conservatives even more. It shows her smiling at a hairstylist in a beauty business. She says in the video, "I came here to change my hair color a bit. I hope it turns out well. I am sure it will be surprising." Islamic conservatives argue that Sheha has disappointed women and girls who had looked to her as a model of correct behavior. "There were many girls that trusted her as a virtuous sister," clergyman Sama Abdel Hamid said on a television talk show. "But now she has failed a large audience of young girls who followed her," he continued. Khadija Karat El-Shatter, daughter of a jailed Muslim Brotherhood leader, posted a long message about the issue on Facebook. She urged Sheha to prove everyone wrong and appear in public wearing the hijab again. Mohammed Al-Sawi, another clergyman, posted a video of himself in tears. He urged Sheha to admit wrongdoing and express regret. Others are showing strong support for the actor. A leading film critic, Tariq Al-Shanawi, celebrated her for bravery in the face of what he described as a difficult society. One debate that recently restarted among Egyptians is whether wearing the hijab or the niqab is an Islamic duty. Another is whether Islam's traditional clothing for women protects them in public from sexual abuse. There has long been a conflict between liberals and Islamists, with the status of women always the battlefield, said political researcher Saeed Sadek. It is often a question of veil or no veil. Sheha remains unmoved by the national debate. "I am just at a different phase in my life now," she told the AP, "and I am happy that I am going back to acting." I'm Katie Weaver.
Scientists say they have discovered the remains of an ancient female whose mother was a Neanderthal and whose father was Denisovan. Neanderthals and Denisovans are early human species that have been extinct for thousands of years. The discovery marks the first time scientists have found the remains of a child created by these two kinds of early humans. The researchers found the 90,000-year-old pieces of bone in southern Siberia. The team published their findings in the journal Nature on Wednesday. Neanderthals lived in Europe and Asia. Remains of Denisovans are known only from the cave where the bone was found. Both groups disappeared by about 40,000 years ago. Past genetic studies have shown evidence of sexual relations between the two groups, as well as with our own species, Homo sapiens. The unions show in the genetic structure, or DNA, of today's people. But the new study is the first to identify a first-generation child with Neanderthal and Denisovan parents. Svante Pebo is one of the lead researchers of the study. He is a geneticist at the Max Planck Institute for Evolutionary Anthropology in Leipzig, Germany. Pebo said he was surprised the bones were found. Both Neanderthal and Denisovan remains are rarely discovered anywhere in the world. so finding an actual child of the two groups seemed like unusually good luck, Pabo said. The discovery is also interesting because the two groups were more different from each other than any two present-day human groups. The fact that we stumbled across this makes you wonder if the mixing wasn't quite frequent, said Pabo. Ron Pinhasi is a physical anthropologist at the University of Vienna who was not involved in the study. He noted that the discovery does not answer how often Neanderthals and Denisovans mated. If they mated often, he said, the DNA of Neanderthals and Denisovans would not show such major differences. Anders Ericsson is an evolutionary population geneticist at King's College London who was not involved in the study either. He suggested that the DNA could be looked at in several different ways. I think they convincingly showed that genetically this individual falls halfway between the Neanderthal and Denisovan fossils found in the same cave, said Ericsson. But I'm less convinced that it is necessarily a first-generation offspring of a Neanderthal and Denisovan. The fossil could instead have come from a population with nearly an equal mix of Neanderthal and Denisovan relatives, he observed. And it will take studies of more fossils to find this out. The authors of this week's report said the small pieces of bone likely came from the arm or leg of a female who was at least 13 years old at the time of death. They call her Denisova 11. The researchers compared her DNA with other ancient DNA. They learned that the genes from her mother were more closely related to Neanderthals who lived later in Europe than other Neanderthal remains from the cave. This finding suggests that Neanderthals moved westward over time. Svante Pabo said the latest discovery suggests that the now extinct ancient relatives of humans were not killed off by warfare, as many experts believe. Instead, it supports a theory that our ancient relatives combined with modern humans through sexual relationships. I'm Pete Musto.
Now it is time for American Stories. Our story today is from the writer O. Henry.
Transients in Arcadia. There is a certain hotel on Broadway that is very pleasant in the summer. Not many people have heard about it. It is wide and cool. Its rooms have walls of dark wood. There are green trees around it and soft winds. It has all the pleasures of mountain living and none of the pains. You will eat better fish there than you could catch for yourself in the streams and hills. You will have better meat than a hunter brings home from the forest. A few have discovered this cool spot in the hot summer of New York. You will see these few guests eating dinner in the hotel restaurant. They are happy to be there and happy to know that they are very few. They feel especially wise because they have found this delightful place. More waiters than necessary are always near. They bring what is wanted before anyone asks for it. The pleasing distant noise of Broadway sounds like running water in a forest. At every strange footstep, the guests turn quickly and look. They are afraid that the restless pleasure-seekers will find their hotel and destroy its pleasant quiet. And so these few live during the hot season. They enjoy the delights of mountain and seashore. All is brought to them in their Broadway hotel. This summer, a lady came to the hotel giving this name.
Madame Louise d'Arcet-Beaumont.
The name was like a name in the story of a great romance. and Madame Beaumont was the kind of lady the Hotel Lotus loved. She was beautiful, and her manner was very fine. Everyone wished to serve her. The other guests believed that, as a guest, she was perfection. This perfect guest did not often leave the hotel. In this, she was like the other guests of the Hotel Lotus. To enjoy that hotel, one needed to forget the city. New York might have been miles away. At night, sometimes one might go out, but during the hot day, one remained in the cool shade of the Lotus. Madame was alone in the Hotel Lotus. She was alone as a queen is alone because of her high position. She rose from bed late in the morning. She was then a sweet, soft person who seemed to shine quietly. But at dinner, she was different. She would wear a beautiful dress. I cannot find words fine enough to tell about it. Always there were red flowers at her shoulder. When the head waiter saw a dress like this, he met it at the door. You thought of Paris when you saw it, and of the theatre, and of old romances. A story about Madame Beaumont was told among the guests in the Hotel Lotus. It was said that she was a woman who had travelled all over the world. It was said that she knew the most important people everywhere. It was said that in her white hands she held the future of certain nations. It was no surprise, they said, that such a lady should choose the Hotel Lotus. It was the most desirable and the most restful place in America during the heat of summer. On the third day of Madame Beaumont's stay in the hotel, a young man entered as a guest. His clothes were quiet, but good. His face was pleasant. His expression was that of a man who had travelled and could understand the world. He said that he would remain 3 or 4 days. He asked about the sailing of certain ships. He seemed to like this hotel the best of all he had known. The young man put his name down on the list of hotel guests. Harold Farrington. It was a name with a fine sound, and the young man belonged perfectly in the quiet life of the Lotus. In one day he became like all the other guests. Like them, he had his table and his waiter. He also had the same fear that the wrong people might suddenly discover this hotel and destroy its peace. After dinner on the next day, Madame Beaumont dropped something as she passed Harold Farrington's table. He picked it up and, following her, returned it. He spoke only a few quiet words as he did this, and she was pleased by his good manners. She knew that he was a gentleman. Guests of the Lotus seemed to understand each other very easily. Perhaps it was the result of having discovered this Broadway hotel. Guests felt sure that only especially fine people would enjoy the cool delights of the Lotus. Now, very quickly, a sudden friendship grew between Farrington and Madame Beaumont. They stood and talked for a few moments.
"I have seen too much of the usual summer hotels," said Madame Beaumont, with a small but sweet smile. "Why go to the mountains or the seashore? We cannot escape noise and dust there. The people who make noise and dust follow us there."
"Even on the ocean," said Farrington sadly. "Those same people are all around us. What shall we do when they discover the Lotus?"
"I hope they don't discover the Lotus this week," said Madame. "I only know one other place I like as well. It is the beautiful home of a prince in the mountains in Europe."
"The best people," said Farrington, "are seeking for the quiet places like this one, where they can escape the crowds."
"I promise myself 3 more days of this delightful rest," said Madame Beaumont. "The next day, my ship sails."
Harold Farrington's eyes showed that he was sorry. I too must leave then, he said. But I am not sailing for Europe.
We cannot stay here forever, though it is so delightful,
said Madame Beaumont.
I like it better than my usual life, which is too full of people. I shall never forget my week in the Hotel Lotus.
Nor shall I, said Farrington in a low voice. And I shall never like the ship that carries you away. On their last evening, the two sat together at a little table. A waiter brought them something cool to eat. Madame Beaumont was wearing the same beautiful dress. She seemed thoughtful. When she had finished eating, she took out $1.
Mr. Farrington,
she said with a smile that everyone in the Lotus loved.
I want to tell you something. I am going to leave early tomorrow morning because I must go back to work. I work selling women's clothes at Casey's shop. That dollar is all the money I have. I won't have any more till I get paid at the end of the week. You're a real gentleman and you've been good to me. I wanted to tell you before I went. For a year I've been planning to come here. Each week I put aside a little of my pay so I would have enough money. I wanted to live one week like a rich lady. I wanted to get up in the morning when I wished. I wanted to be served by waiters. I wanted to have the best of everything. Now I've done it. And I've been happier than I ever was before. And now I'm going back to work. I wanted to tell you about it, Mr. Farrington, because I thought you liked me, and I liked you. This week I've told you many things that weren't true. I told you things I've read about. They never happened to me. I've been living in a story. It wasn't real. I wanted you to think I was a great lady. This dress I'm wearing? It's the only pretty dress I own. I haven't paid for it yet. I'm paying for it a little at a time. The price was $75. It was made for me at O'Dowd and Levinsky's shop. I paid $10 first, and now I have to pay $1 a week until it's all paid. And that's all I have to say, Mr. Farrington, except that my name is Mamie Siviter, and not Madame Beaumont. Thank you for listening to me. This dollar is the dollar I'm going to pay for my dress tomorrow. And now, I'll go up to my room.
As Harold Farrington listened, his face had not changed. When she had finished, he took out a small book and began to write in it. Then, he pulled out the small page with his writing on it and gave it to her. And he took the dollar from her hand. I go to work, too, tomorrow morning, he said, and I decided to begin now. That paper says you've paid your dollar for this week. I've been working for O'Dowd and Levinsky for 3 years. Strange, isn't it? We both had the same idea. I always wanted to stay at a good hotel. I get $20 a week. Like you, I put aside a little money at a time until I had enough. Listen, Mamie, will you go to the pleasure park on Coney Island with me on payday? The girl who had been Madame Eloise d'Arcy Beaumont smiled.
I'd love to go, Mr. Farrington. Coney will be all right. Although, we did live with rich people for a week.
They could hear the night noises of the hot city. Inside the Hotel Lotus, it was cool. The waiter stood near, ready to get anything they asked for. Madame Beaumont started up to her room for the last time. And he said,
Forget that Harold Farrington, will you? McManus is the name. James McManus. Some call me Jimmy.
Good night, Jimmy,
said Madame Beaumont.
That is all the time we have for today. But we'll be back tomorrow with more stories from around the world. For VOA Learning English, I'm Katie Weaver. Thanks for listening.